You give Teller from Jerusalem 20 minutes, and he'll give you the education of a lifetime. King of the Storytellers and the Shakespeare of the Torah world, here is Rabbi Hanoch Teller.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Teller from Jerusalem, another exciting new episode. And again, I was able to prevail upon Rabbi Stephen Weil, one of the most important rabbinic figures in American Jewry, a great leader for us, and a shtadlan who was able to be our intermediary with government officials. He's also the CEO of the Friends of the IDF. And I'm going to ask him now if he could tell us a little about the IDF, which is so important to us, so much in our prayers and our thoughts, and it's so interesting. Please, Rabbi Weil.
Rabbi Teller, thank you very much, and it's an honor to be with you again. Where do you start? I would say this, I'm going to borrow a term that the Israelis use. The platform that shapes Israel is the IDF.
In 1948, David Ben-Gurion, Israel's first prime minister and minister of defense, established mandatory military service in the IDF for both men and women.
You and I think of the IDF as a vehicle that's preventing a nuclear Iran. We view it as the vehicle that's preventing a hegemonic Shia caliphate from the Arabian to the Mediterranean. We view it as the group that's responsible for the defense of Jews, Christians, and Muslims, and others, Druze, Circassians that live in Israel. We view that in that, but the generals, the people who run the IDF, they view it with another hat as well. They don't deny everything we just said, but they view it with a different hat. And they view it as the platform that shapes Israel. What is Israel? Well, we mentioned there's 6-7 major religions there, right? Besides Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, you've got Circassians, you've got Druze, you've got other groups. You have Jews that have come from over 80 countries, okay? You put them together in a very tiny, narrow land. Not a simple thing, because the cultures are so radically different.
I'm just going to add, it's not just 80 lands. Rabbi Sachs has in one of his lectures or in a book he wrote, there's over 150 tongues that are in Israel. It's an amazing statistic.
It's fascinating. Yeah, when you think about Galiciana Jews or Polish Jews or Lithuanian, there's no such thing as a Lithuanian Jew, right? There's very different Litvaks in Belarus, Minsk and Pinsk and Brisk than there are in Vilna in Lithuania or in Kovno or in Shavel. You're right. The Galicianas are very different. Western Galicia is different from Eastern Galicia. Within Western Galicia, there's so many different groups. And you're right, it's not just 82 countries. It's the thousands.
150 tongues.
Wow. Well, they're invested in these young men and young women. And whether these young men or young women go into infantry units, artillery units, tank units, whether they go into intelligence units, cyber defense units, they're invested in the human capital. And I'll tell you, that particularly is the role that I play. That's where I come from. It's the head of Friends of the IDF, because the challenge that the IDF has is this. I'll use an analogy that we can all relate to. 6-7 years ago, President Donald Trump said to Angela Merkel, as well he said it to the French and to the Italians, it's not fair that the American taxpayer is subsidizing rich first world nations. You have to do your fair share. We'll be there. We'll fund NATO. We'll send our troops to NATO. But it's not right. You have to do your fair share. What did he mean by that? He was asking these first world nations to fulfill the average. Spend 2% of your GNP, 2% of your GDP, on military. That's only right. And then America can subsidize the rest. So take that benchmark of 2%. Israel used to spend 15% between military and security. Until this war, the last few years, it was 10.2%. To give you the exact numbers, 5.2% is the IDF, 5% is the Shabak, which is the Israeli FBI and DHS, and the Mossad, which is Israeli CIA. So 10.2% is spent on military and security. It's a miracle of biblical proportions that Israel survives. They don't have the luxury that we do in America of GI bills and all of the above, but they desperately, desperately want these men and women to be able to have the opportunity to live the Israeli dream. What do I mean, live the Israeli dream? What the IDF is interested in is that whether you're a kid who grew up in North Tel Aviv with either wealthy or upper middle class parents who had a great education in a public school, whose parents could get you all kinds of enrichment and after school education, or whether you're somebody who grew up in Kiryat Malachi as an Ethiopian, which doesn't have great public schools, in Ofakim or Netivot, which are definitely communities that are improving and getting better and better, but historically haven't had the same education that you get in other parts of Israel. Or let's say you're a Ukrainian kid.
It's so interesting that in Israel they call these development towns, which is a euphemistic term for undeveloped town. Right?
Yeah, exactly. They have this phrase, the periphery. The periphery, to use our American lingo, would be backwoods Mississippi, or I would say Black Harlem. You know, that's when they refer to the periphery. It's not just South Tel Aviv. It's the small towns, you know, in
the
south, on the borders, up north, you know, Nahariya, etc. What used to be known as Nazrat Elite now is Nof HaGalil, you know, Upper Nazareth, you know, places like this. Kiryat Malachi, which is the Hebrew word for Los Angeles, the city of angels where the Ethiopians are. You know, these public schools, they don't get the same education. You look, every country as a function of demographics and geographic, there's have and have nots. And the goal of the IDF is to give everyone a chance to make it, to give everyone the chance to live the Israeli dream.
The Friends of the Israel Defense Forces was founded in 1981 with the ultimate mission of caring for the well-being of IDF soldiers. Friends of the IDF provides social, educational, cultural, and recreational programs and builds facilities throughout Israel for the young men and women of the IDF. FIDF believes that education is the key to a better future and a better world. FIDF promotes a range of educational programs that broaden the soldiers' knowledge and strengthen their Jewish identity. Education and knowledge are the keys to a stronger community.
What about, for instance, what's called Netzach Yehuda for the ultra-Orthodox?
Established in February 1999, the Nachal Haredi started with just 30 soldiers, but today has more than 2,300 active duty soldiers and over 8,000 alumni. The Nachal Haredi organization goes beyond mentorship and support for lone soldiers in active duty, assisting their veterans through scholarships to university, guidance for higher education, job placement, financial aid for newly married couples, and general support for settling into civilian life.
Transitioning to military service causes unique challenges for the Haredi soldier that the IDF was unable to meet. The partnership with the Netzach NGO provided an essential, tailor-made, groundbreaking network of support to ensure the success of every Haredi soldier.
Part of the program there, because I know this because we fund it, for those 3,800 young men, who are now not just infantry soldiers in the Jordan Valley, but now our elite infantry, they're what's called Chetz, the Haredim Tzanchanim, the paratroopers. They're in the Air Force. They're in the Givati Infantry Brigade. They're making huge, huge contributions. You know, they have been for years. There's 3,800 of them, but part of the goal is the last 6 months of their tour of duty is education.
Most civilian jobs and educational institutions in Israel require at least a high school completion certificate. This level of education is the minimum for achieving success in the Israeli job market.
Currently, there are about 9,000 soldiers serving in the IDF who did not complete 12 years of education.
The formal education program offers them an opportunity to finish schooling towards the end of their military service and helps them in their pursuit of a better future.
We fund that continuing education, whether they're going to get a job as a computer programmer, an engineer, whatever it is. It's an opportunity for every Israeli, no matter what their color, no matter what their religion. And what's fascinating in the IDF, first priority goes to minorities. Minorities are Christians, Muslims, and Druze. Fascinating. They get first priority on all of these opportunities. And it's, they call it in Hebrew, Tzva'am, the army of the people. because the goal is that the experience of the army is to take a 17-year-old kid, let's use the analogy of an American kid, you know, a bit self-centered, sometimes a bit narcissistic, you know, attached to their phone, thinks of themselves.
As the stereotype goes, if you were born in the 80s or 90s, you may not be prepared for the real world.
Perhaps because they got so much praise growing up and they got a trophy just for showing up.
Millennials, accused of being addicted to social media.
If you're sitting at dinner with your friends and you're texting somebody who's not there, that's a problem.
That young man or young woman, as a consequence or as a part of the experience of going to the army, they come out with a sense of responsibility.
And discipline.
Discipline. They come out a giver, not a taker. They go from being self-centered to giving. They challenge them. They are challenged in ways that they never knew they could be challenged. And they come out of there with a much broader sense of humanity, much broader sense of commitment, a much broader sense of giving, of responsibility, you know, the Hebrew term achrayut. They come out of there different people. I'm not saying it's 100% the case. I'm saying it's 95 or higher. And the other thing is, think about America. They have the DirecTV is 500 channels. You know, you have these chats, you have these blogs, where basically everyone sees the world exactly the way you do. There's such a sense of being threatened on the university campuses. They'll never take someone who's conservative. They'll never take someone, you know, who's a straight white male that's conservative to be a professor for the humanities. Everybody has to fit into a very, very narrow box that sees the world exactly the way we do. You know, it's this, I hate to say it, it's this narcissistic controlling way of doing things that ultimately is very unhealthy for society. The IDF is just the opposite. In a bunk, this one's an Ethiopian, this one's grandparents came from Morocco, this one is an American lone soldier, this one is from the Ukraine, this one, they moved in the 1990s with the downfall of the former Soviet Union, they came from Lithuania. This one, the grandparents were Iraqi, this one's a Muslim, this one's a Christian, this one's a Druze from the Galilee. Now what happens? They have a term they use for each other. It's the ultimate fraternity, the ultimate sorority. After they leave the army, they call themselves Achim L'Chaim, brothers for life. They will disagree on religious principles. They will disagree on political principles. They will disagree on everything. But they view each other as literally blood brothers, blood
they
sisters.
They went through trenches together.
Yes, exactly. And we don't have that in America, in the United States. That's what shapes Israel. And that's why they can argue and disagree, but they'll sacrifice their lives for each other. And I mean that literally. I don't mean that figuratively. That's what shapes this country. And that's what makes this miracle of Israel, is that whole platform. I'm using their terminology, the platform of the army, that ultimately brings such disparate people and merges them into this tapestry, into this beautiful, you know, sometimes we joke and we call it, it's a family, but a dysfunctional family. I call it a beautiful tapestry, because it really is a beautiful tapestry of so many cultures, so many languages, so many religions, so many backgrounds, so many perspectives, but they care about each other.
Could you please tell us a little bit about the work that you do on behalf of the Friends of IDF?
Yeah, what the Army tasks us, the Ministry of Defense and the General Staff, and we have meetings all the time, they define what their needs are. They show us their budgets. So what we let's assume we're not dealing with a war, because what we're doing right now is radically different. I'll get to that in a minute. But on a regular year where there's no war, we're funding these transformational educational programs that enable these young men and young women to live the Israeli dream. No matter what their background, no matter what their challenges are, whether they're on the spectrum of autism, whether they don't have a high school diploma, whether they, you name it, we fund it. And they operate it in a beautiful way. The one thing we operate is any combat or combat support soldier who couldn't moonlight when they were in the army because they weren't living at home, they were in a tent or a bunk somewhere, we fund their university education plus spending money. Okay, so for that program, that we are the GI Bill, so to speak, in Israel. But most of what we do are transformational educational programs in its welfare.
I'm so sorry. I wasn't familiar with what you just said. Every soldier is entitled to this, or only certain ones can qualify?
You're referring to the college university scholarship? So when it comes to the university scholarship, they have two requirements. I'm sorry, three. One is they were in a combat or combat support unit, so they couldn't have worked while they were in the Army. They couldn't have moonlighted at a restaurant on the weekends or at night. Number two is that they below a certain socioeconomic level, a certain gross income, monthly gross income. Number three is that they give 130 hours of chesed, 130 hours a year to one of 15 charities. They volunteer. And then we fund their education plus their spending money for university.
Who developed this platform?
This is something that Friends of the IDF has been doing for 21 or 22 years. We have right now 4,000 former soldiers in the program. Unfortunately, a few of them were killed in this war. I'm a proud donor of two of these students. Each of them has an incredible story. Welfare. I'll give you an example. Israel has 25% of the population in some form of poverty. Just to use terms, in America we call it poverty. In Israel, there's two terms: tachat kav haoni, below, that's called deep poverty, below the poverty level, and then chuma for the gray zone. We don't know exactly because it's classified, but if we could assume the army, when it's not in a war mode, has 185,000 officers and soldiers. Let's assume that. I'm not saying that's exact because I don't know the exact number, but that's a pretty good guess. 50,000, 10,000 are below the poverty level, 40,000 are in the gray zone. After this war, it will be many more. So we fund the support for them, their families. And the Army does it in such an incredibly dignified way. The Army implants social workers in every battalion to a rate of about one social worker for every 150 soldiers. That's the ratio they do. They're specifically have two jobs. One is they're looking for signs of potentially PTSD, signs of emotional challenges. And the second thing they're doing is they're looking after the welfare of the soldier. They visit the families. They bring the commander to visit the families.
I'm on the verge of tears. This is the most beautiful thing I've heard, what Israel's doing. Wow. But how do we have the resources to fund this? This is gargantuan.
Yeah, we raise, we have a budget here of over $120 million in the States that we raise from Jews and Christians. Forget it, during the war, it's more than twice that because of the emergency campaign.
So it's donations. That's how you get
it. It's donations. I'd say about 96% of the money comes from Jews and about 3-4% comes from Christian Zionists in America. Many of them evangelicals, many of them not evangelicals. And it goes for the welfare as well. We fund for them anything that's not military. Their infirmaries, synagogues, gymnasiums, auditoriums, Krav Maga rooms, anything that's not military, we fund. But primarily what the generals want from us is the education and the welfare, so that every one of these men and women can live the Israeli dream. And as I said before, their first priority goes to minorities, to Druze, to Muslims, to Christians, to Circassians. That gets the first priority. Not that there's a lot of Muslims in the army. It's a small number. Not that there's a ton of Christians in the army. It's a bigger number. But there are a lot of Druze in the army. 88% of all Druze men go to the IDF. Most of them, I should say, serve in combat units, which means that they have a very high fatality rate because they're in combat units. They're not sitting in a cyber defense or an intelligence unit. Let me say this. Knowing the major generals, starting with General Herzi Halevi and on down, spending time with them, this whole branch of the Army called ACA, the Human Resources Branch, they are incredibly invested in these young men and young women. As human beings, as Jews, as Christians, as Muslims, they're invested in them as individuals, not just because they need them to prevent Iran from going nuclear. And I'll give you a broad stroke. We fund probably 65% of everything. The Israeli people, through what's called the Aguda Laman HaChayal, our partners in this, they fund about 25% of everything. And then small groups across the world fund the other 10%. Most of it comes from us. But the Israeli people who are growing in their philanthropy, both companies, you have Israeli companies that will adopt units and fund the poor, the poor soldiers in the unit the way that we do, as well as Israeli individuals do invest in this.
Tell us a little more about contemporaneously with the Army. What your interaction?
They take a kid and they turn them into a caring, responsible adult. They give them skills. Not everyone has all the skills, but I'll give you an example. I have a daughter who's in the cyber defense unit for the Air Force. You know, there's kids in various units like 8200, 81, the intelligence units. When they come out of the Army, they don't have to go to university. Technology companies all over the world are fighting and clawing to get these young men and young women because of the education. Just to give you a simple example, I have a son who, after learning in Israel, studying at Ner Yisrael, got a master's in from Yeshiva University in cybersecurity. So he happens to work at a finance tech bank, a fintech bank in cybersecurity. He made it very clear. He says, Dad, he says, the education that my sister, your daughter, got in the IDF was far too superior. And YU was rated the number two master's, number two graduate program after Berkeley in cybersecurity in America. And he says, her education was far superior to what I got in my master's program. And he's very grateful and he's very proud of his master's degree. That's the kind of education they get. You know, those who are in other units get a different kind of education. But if I could go back to what we said before, it turns them, if we only had that in the United States, look at who are the best citizens in the United States. The young men and young women who do Teach for America, they give a year or two of their life, they get sent to some inner city school, and they do Teach for America. They come out of it great Americans, responsible Americans, giving Americans.
Teach for America, more than anything else, is a provocation, right? It's like somebody poking a hole in the system and saying it doesn't have to be this way. What if it was different?
Look at the Mormons with the notion they have, you know, of spending a year or two for the movement, for the community. You know, they come out of there just in general is much more giving, much more caring, responsible human beings. And that's what the FIDF does. I'm sorry, I apologize. That's what the IDF does. We fund it. That's what the Israel Defense Forces
Okay, we finally can end now on a really good note. And that's really encouraging. This actually was Ben-Gurion's plan, to make the army one, which will be one country, one army, and providing all the opportunities for each and every one of the soldiers. So I commend you and I salute you for all the work. That's a good word. I salute you for all the work you're doing in this regard. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, everyone. I want to encourage everyone to go turn to my website, hanochteller.com. You'll find my new book there on Rabbi Kelemer. There's always a discount for every product that's on the website.
Thanks for listening to Teller from Jerusalem, where this series takes an intelligent and thought-provoking look at the past in order to acquire a perspective on the present. Spread knowledge by giving us a 5-star review and tell your friends to subscribe. Join us next time for a brand new episode, and be sure to visit tellerfromjerusalem.com, where you can find more details about the show and other useful information. Check out the site store, and just by inserting TFJ code, you'll receive an additional 10% discount off the already very reduced prices of all Chanoch Teller products, books, lectures, and documentaries. And remember, don't forget, you can get Teller from Jerusalem on any podcast platform or go to tellerfromjerusalem.com.